Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will be joined by Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Duran and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh to answer your questions. But we're going to start the hour talking about vegetable gardens. Beautiful, colorful vegetable gardens. And of course, gardens are producing like crazy right now. And it's a great time of year to visit other people's gardens and learn from them. And you can do that at Iowa State University's Demonstration Garden Field Days. Cindy Haynes is an associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and she'll be at a number of these field days. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And one of the themes of the field days this year is planting the rainbow, a whole bunch of different colors. Colored vegetables. Tell me about the inspiration for this.
Well, part of this is the inspiration for the pantry garden. So at the home demonstration gardens for the past 2 or 3 years, we have actually planted vegetables that they donate to local food pantries. And this year we wanted to do something a little bit different with that. We still wanted to have the pantry garden, so we still wanted to donate vegetables to local food pantries, but we wanted to showcase the variety of vegetables that are out there. And one of the best ways to showcase that variety is to say, you know, tomatoes don't have to be red. They can be pink or orange or purple.
It feels like we're getting a lot more choices now when we want to plant in our vegetable garden. Are these new hybrids? Are these heirlooms? Is it a mixture?
It's usually a mix. So with the tomatoes, most of them are new hybrids. But, you know, there are some out there that are, you know, heirlooms as well that have these different colors, too. So it's the range of colors for these vegetables, you have usually heirloom or hybrid options.
All right. Well, let's talk about then going about picking vegetables by color, which is it's a little counterintuitive.
Well, a tomato that's pink or red or orange is usually still tastes like a tomato. It's just a different color. The same with the beans. You can get green beans that aren't green. They can be purple or yellow. You can do the same thing with cauliflower. That's one of the newer ones where you can have cauliflower that's not white. It could be purple, brilliant purples, or kind of an orangey yellow. So lots of options when you start looking at those different cultivars or varieties that are available in some of these vegetables.
When kids are eating dinner, often we tell them, eat something green.
Right.
So we can tell a little bit about the kinds of nutrients that are in vegetables by the colors that they are. With some of these different colors, does it actually change the nutrient makeup or not?
It does. Usually when they say when you get a darker, more vibrant color, sometimes that increases certain vitamins. So cauliflower is okay white, but purple cauliflower usually has a little bit more. And then, you know, lycopene is really high in the red tomatoes, but, you know, you still get other vitamins in the other colors as well. So that's why I think nutritionists, and I am not one, I will say that really quickly, that's why they say eat a rainbow, so that you eat that diversity of colors and then you're getting a variety of those vitamins and minerals.
All right. So you're not necessarily compromising on nutrition. You may be inviting something new into your diet.
Right. In fact, when we talk about sweet potatoes, which are orange, or the winter squash that's often orange on the inside, you're not compromising at all. You're increasing that nutritional value compared to a regular potato.
Now, last year, when I visited the horticulture farm near Ames, I had a long conversation with some of the horticulture students there who had a little farmer's market and were selling. And we talked a long time about the different kinds of flavors of the different color vegetables.
Oh.
So I'm curious about what your feelings are about how these different colors may affect the flavors.
Right. So one of the things that sometimes we do at some of the home demonstration garden field days is we pull a few of these different cultivars and we'll do a little taste test. So if we have, you know, purple cauliflower and the orange cauliflower and the white cauliflower, we can taste the difference. And with my taste palette, and yes, I maybe don't have the best, I can't tell a difference. So,
do you do them blindfolded?
No, I don't. Maybe I should.
Yeah, I think we need to get pretty scientific about
this. We do. Yeah, I usually can't taste too much. I do taste a difference in different cultivars of tomatoes and maybe different types of beans and even some different types of squash. But I don't know that it's always related to color. My son, who's 10, thinks that the orange cauliflower tastes like, you know, cauliflower that's more cheesy. So, but I don't think he would say that blindfolded.
Right. Probably not. Is he more enthusiastic about eating it?
Maybe. Sometimes. It all depends on the day.
How about yield? Have you seen a difference in yield in looking at some of these different varieties?
Well, this is the first year, so I can't tell you if we've seen any difference yet. So we're just kind of coming into production. Hopefully I could tell you that next year. And some of these are fairly new, like the purple cauliflower. This is the first time we've ever grown it. But I have noticed that they are producing. So, you know, one big head of cauliflower and on each plant is a pretty nice thing to see.
So when people come to the demonstration gardens on these field days, they get a chance to see what's growing. They get a chance to talk to horticulturists about the different things that they see growing. Do you give people an opportunity to taste as well?
We try. So we'll, you know, tell them that if they want to taste, you know, a purple bean versus a goldenrod bean versus the regular green bean, they can certainly do that.
I hope you're going to also introduce blindfolds to that as well.
I will. I will do that at our next. We have a few field days coming up next week, and Armstrong and Muscatine are on Tuesday, and Richard's going to one. I'm going to another, and I will make sure Richard and I both take blindfolds so that we can make sure they're doing a proper taste test on these different green beans and maybe cauliflower.
All right.
It's not happening.
Richard says no. All right. Well,
I will give it a try. And sometimes it, you know, that's a fun thing to do when everyone tastes something a little bit different. So
now I know that the field days take part around the state. You have research farms. Iowa State has research farms around the state. Have you seen, and maybe this is not something you know, but have there been differences in how things are performing in different areas of the state this year?
Sure. And usually there is some differences in performance. I've only done one field day so far. It was in Rock Rapids, and they had a lot of rain this year. So things were a little bit behind. Potatoes were in particular a little bit behind because they took a little bit longer to come up, and they weren't forming as well as I expected. Or as well as they usually do. But other things like the cool season crops looked great. So, and we will see some difference between Rock Rapids and Muscatine, which I'm going to on Tuesday, because that's a really dry soil, sandy soil, and they've been a little warmer and a lot drier. So there's always some differences, which is why this home demonstration garden field days is so good, because those cultivars or those varieties that work well at all of these different stations usually means that we have found something really reliable for all of Iowa.
With the home demonstration gardens, of course, you have access to a lot of individuals who are going to work hard on these gardens. You also have access to the kind of equipment that we may not have at home. Do you try to garden in the same way as a home gardener would?
Right. We do try and make it like a home gardener would. So we're not always using plants or cultivars that, you know, only a commercial horticulture specialist could get. So we're getting seed from seed sources that, you know, homeowners have access to. We're growing in, you know, a typical garden size. I think the whole area is like 40 by 80. So it's a big garden, but it's, you know, not unreasonable for a decent home garden to have. And then we're using methods, cultural practices, you know, mulching and staking that most home gardeners would do. We do have master gardener volunteers that help. So they're our best home gardeners as well. And they help harvest and they help maintain as well. We have tillers. I think the only big difference is most of these farms have slightly bigger tillers and they do a better job of tilling early in the season. But after that, it's mostly maintained by hand.
What else can people see when they visit the home demonstration gardens this year?
Well, each farm has something a little bit different. So at these different research farms, they usually have something else that you can see as well. Some will have a shrub trial. One has a weed identification area. There's one that has a prairie. So there's lots of, and Rock Rapids had a children's garden. So they all have something a little bit different. The home demonstration garden isn't the only thing. And with the home demonstration garden, we also have not only the pantry garden, the rainbow pantry garden, but we have a pollinator section as well. We call it the bee-friendly garden. So we have an area dedicated to flowers that attract bees, which is also really important at the home vegetable garden.
Well, and it's something that a lot of people have expressed a lot of interest in. Mm-hmm. Is there anything unique about those gardens? What would I see?
With the bee-friendly garden, you'll see a lot of unusual flowers. So you'll see a plant called bee-friendly. So you'll see lots of bee balms. You'll see some herbs, and you'll see lots of like salvia, cleome, a few other kind of unusual things, a Mexican sunflower. So maybe a few types of flowers that you haven't seen before that are known to really attract a lot of bees.
And can you see the pollinators when you visit?
Yes. And in fact, I've Laura Jesse from the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic trained me on how to look and identify different types of bees. And be patient and can count bees on the home demonstration garden. So, and I have seen a number of different types of bees, honeybees, bumblebees, and a lot of flies and other types of little wasp and bees all over the place.
Nice.
It is nice.
Is there one thing in visiting, I know you've only been to one of the field days so far, but I'm sure you've seen some of these gardens as they move along. Is there one thing that you're most excited about, impressed by this year that maybe you'll take to your home garden?
I think it's probably, I'm always impressed by the multicolored beans, the bush beans, and how well they produce. So having amethyst and goldenrod, and how much easier it is to harvest a bean that's green, or not green.
Not green, because you can see it.
You can see it. So that's the one thing I always do at home.
All right, an exciting benefit. Mm-hmm. The demonstration days, the field days are coming up. On July 24th, there's one in at the Armstrong Research Farm in Lewis and Muscatine Island Research Farm in Fruitland. There's July 26th, the Horticulture Research Station in Ames. July 28th, Northeast Research Farm in Nashua. August 7th, Monona County Fairgrounds in Ottawa. And August 8th, Northern Research Farm in Kanawha. And we'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. I've also tweeted out a link at Charity Nebbe to all of those field days coming up soon, so you can take a look at the list, see if there's one near you or one you'd like to drive to. Also with us, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Already rejected my idea for blindfold, but it's lovely to have you here anyway. And Mark Vitosh is here, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
I'll do it. I'll do anything once.
Awesome.
Sounds like a great plan. You are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And the first question is from Brandt in Des Moines. He says his question is for you, Mark. He says, any tips or recommendations for pruning or shaping a star magnolia, approximately 2 to 3 years old?
The other two can chime in too, but you know, star magnolias don't get very big, Brandt, and so what I would look more for is rubbing and crossing branches that are dead. And actually, you can prune still now for the next couple weeks or so, mid-June to July, early August. For a lot of shade trees, we always talk, I'll have to retract what Dr. Isle said last week, but we don't want to be pruning oaks right now. But another,
he didn't technically say.
He winked. I heard it on the radio. So in general, right now is still an okay time to prune. There's some newer research that shows you get a better wound response and stuff. The thing to remember, to me on a young tree, I would really try to limit what I do. I want that tree to grow for a couple years. But if I have immediate, smaller, rubbing, crossing branches, or as the crown develops, if I get two branches growing together that create a V connection, I'd want to get that earlier. But you really want to minimize. Trees need that foliage to survive. So I would be very particular and not do a lot the first couple years. But if I have major issues that I can get, I would try to get them when I'm smaller. And if over time, if he's going to lift that a little bit, you want those branches that you're going to lift to get between 1 inch and 2 inches and get them before they're 2 inches. You want to leave those lower branches on for a while so that can build up the tree. So I would say right now I would just go for dead branches. And as crossing branches and things develop, take that over the years. Anything else, guys?
No, sounds good.
It's basically, that is a large shrub or small tree. So not a whole lot of pruning on that, no.
All right, we've got a question from Marlene. She says, I have a potted dahlia, and it's been covered with blooms and looking very healthy. The past few days, the leaves and flowers seem to be turning a rust color. Do you have any idea what would cause this or if there's anything to do about it? One side of the plant seems worse than the other. It looks like something on the leaves, but you can't scrape it off, and I don't see any insects.
It could be a fungal disease, possibly. They might want to start by maybe taking some photos and sending those to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State. Their email address is P as in plant, I as in insect, D as in disease, C as in clinic, at iastate.edu.
All right, and here's a question from Lynn in Iowa City. She says, this is the first year I've tried growing cantaloupe. Searching the internet results in conflicting information. That's a little shocking, huh? Regarding pruning cantaloupe vines. I've read yes, and I've read no. What is your recommendation?
I would give them plenty of room and not prune them back. Now, sometimes if you have a smaller space, you may have to do some minor pruning, but it should be very limited. Otherwise, just let them go.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. You can also email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sharon is on the line in Johnston. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I live in an apartment, and I was wondering if there is any form of cucumber, bush cucumber plant that you can pot in, well, put in a flower pot, so to speak, and grow.
There are a few bush-type varieties. I can't think of the names offhand, but there are. I would check like a catalog, but there are some varieties that you could put in a large pot. Just make sure it has drainage holes in the bottom, and they do fine.
Some of those cucumber varieties, even though they're patio types, they still need something to kind of climb on. So put them next to a railing that they can climb up. Or sometimes we put a little trellis in the container so that they have a trellis that they can climb on too. Because they still...
How big a pot would that take?
I like something like a 5-gallon pot size at least. For those that
may have... like a 5-gallon bucket?
Yeah, like a 5-gallon bucket would work pretty well. Make sure there's some drainage holes, but yeah, that'd work.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think as far as varieties, there's like pickle bush is one.
Right.
So there's a number of basically bush-type varieties.
All right. Thank you so much, Sharon. Next up, we've got Jim in Des Moines. Hi, Jim.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
My question is about sycamore trees this year. They seem to be shedding bark a lot worse than normal, and it's been ongoing all summer. And they're also dropping those little balls. I don't know what you call them, but the little balls that they drop, and they break open and have all these little needles. And it prevents you from walking barefoot anywhere in the driveway or the yard because they really pinch you when you step on them. And it's been ongoing and nonstop all summer long.
Actually, Jim, I would agree with that observation. I actually live in Iowa City, and I've noticed that a lot over the last 3 to 4 weeks. And when I really noticed it is when the heat increased, when it got really, really hot. Sycamores normally flake bark. You know, everyone considers them a messy tree. They do it all the time. And there could have been just some relation to that heat stretch that we had. I mean, normally, again, we see bark falling off sycamores all the time. But I did really notice, I actually saw people sweeping their sidewalks and raking their yards. Wow. And the good news is that is normal for that tree. It does seem a little extreme as far as it happening a lot over the last probably 3 to 4 weeks. And as far as the seed pods, that those little sticky things are actually, each one is the seed. Those balls, though, usually get kind of mushy as things get wet and stuff. It's possible if there's newer seed balls on there, they're hard before they ripen. And so that might be what you're seeing this time of year is the greener balls, but they normally turn brown and then those seeds separate.
So would the ones that Jim is seeing, are they falling prematurely?
They could be. We've actually had on a number of species, I've seen some oaks falling. Again, weather has everything to do with everything, it seems like. And even like the walnuts, I'm seeing some premature chop on walnuts, and I'm seeing some oak. So it could be possible if they're really stiff, those could be this year's falling a little early. And I would pretty much put that off on the weather.
Are you worried about Jim's trees at all?
No, I'm not. I mean, again, I don't know how many calls regularly every year people will call. They move into a new place and they say all the bark's falling off their tree, and 99 times out of 100, it's a sycamore. That is a normal characteristic. But again, I think maybe because of the heat and stuff, that has caused it to kind of be a little greater than normal. But it's a normal practice on sycamores.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Sycamore's a very giving tree. It's always giving you something.
And they're beautiful.
They are. They really, you take that tree on the campus at Iowa State over by Hilton Coliseum in the wintertime at about 4:30 in the afternoon, that sun hits that tree. Yeah. It is awesome.
There's nothing prettier.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad Jim asked that question. I was walking around by the state capitol in Des Moines last week and under a beautiful row of sycamore trees, and there was so much bark.
Yes,
and
yes,
we had a long conversation about, is this normal? Are they okay?
So. Yes, and not quite, but they should be okay.
All right. Mary is on the line next in Altoona. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question for the forester about my evergreens, my conifers in my yard, and about the wisdom of having them sprayed twice in the summer with a fungicide. It's we're in an older home, my 1940s, farmstead. And when we first moved on the place about 25 years ago, we lost several firs. We had to cut them down because they had so many dead limbs in them. And we're dropping, so many needles into, like, the gutters and things like that. And I want to protect, we planted afresh, and we wanted to keep them going. I mean, we still have some of the older ones, too. And we were told spraying with a fungicide spray twice a year would help them. And I'm wondering if that's true.
Well, Mary, are these actually probably blue spruce? Are they blue?
Some are blue spruce, Norwegian pine. Is it pine? Are they pine?
There's a Norway
and
spruce.
And concolors.
And concolors. Okay.
Yeah, Norway spruce, concolors, and one blue spruce. I think there's just one blue spruce left.
Actually, I would only recommend spraying if you have a problem, and you'd want to see if you have a problem. I could tell you with the blue spruce, they're very susceptible to a needle cast disease, which is caused by a fungus. It tends to start at the bottom, work its way up to the top, starts on the inside of the branches, comes out to the tips. That's either called rhizosphere or stigmina. There's two different types of fungi that can cause that, and there are some treatments for that you have to do twice a year. But on the concolor fir and the Norway spruce, unless I'm seeing problems, especially the Norway spruce, they don't tend to have the same needle issues as the blue spruce or the white spruce. So unless I have a true issue, I would not just be spraying randomly or just protectively, because those don't tend to have as many issues. What I would do if I start to see some problems, I would send samples to the plant disease clinic up in Ames, as Richard talked about earlier, and get it diagnosed and then find out what the schedule is to do it correctly. That way you're not wasting any chemical.
Okay. We also put in a bunch of Wichita junipers, Wichita blue spruce, I don't know if you've heard of those before. And I'm wondering if they would need anything like that. And then another tree that we have that's kind of different is a Black Hills spruce. kind of thing, South Dakota. Yeah. Would those be anything that you should keep an eye on?
I think you should keep an eye on everything. The best way to keep healthy plants is to walk through once a week, and talking to them is optional if you want to talk to them or not.
But, I talk to them. I love my trees.
Well, I talk to everyone's trees, so especially when I'm on my bike. But the best thing you can do during the growing season is once a week, walk through those areas and look for odd things. Look for branches turning yellow. Look for leaves turning off color. Look for insects, stuff like that. And just continue to monitor and do that throughout the time that you enjoy that landscape. And that's the best way to get on top of any new issues. A lot of times these needle diseases and stuff progress fairly slowly, so you can often see the symptoms of some of these different problems. And if you start to see things that are odd, then you try to investigate, diagnose what it is, and then if there's some type of treatment. And I would do that on any kind of yard plant, be it a bush or shrub or anything else, trees. Basically monitor those and then try to diagnose the problem and then find out. It's better you don't want to spray first and then find out what it is. You want to find out what it is and then see what all the management options are. Great question.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Mary. Next, let's go to Alan in Clarion. Hi, Alan.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call.
Yeah, what's your question?
I've got asparagus, and I'm new at it. I've had it for about 3 years. To get edible, do I cut the seed stems down, or do I let the seed stems grow out?
Just leave the plants grow, and just leave that until basically late winter, then cut it back. And then you can begin harvesting next spring, and then stop harvesting around mid-June. Let it grow at that point. And the only thing you have to really do is keep the weeds out for the most part.
So do not cut down the seed stock.
Nope, because the plants right now, that ferny growth, is manufacturing food for the plant. And the more food it can manufacture and store in the roots, the better the crop next spring. So just leave that foliage basically in place. Pull out any weeds that get to be a problem, and then cut it back to the ground basically in late March, early April.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, we've got Chris on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Last year I had a really good year growing cucumbers. This year, however, I've noticed that several of them are turning yellow before I can even pick them. And so I was wondering if that was because of too much water or could there be something else going on?
So the actual fruit are turning yellow?
Yeah, okay. They seem to be turning yellow and hard to get them ripe. They seem to jump right to that way that turning yellow before I can even pick them.
It may be due to the weather, again, the very hot temperatures. Maybe we're not getting very good pollination. And they're just not developing like they should. Temperatures in the mid to upper 90s are not very desirable. Temperatures in the 80s would be much better. So I think it may be weather-related, would be my guess.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Chris. Next up, we've got Ralph in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Hi there. I've got about a half a dozen plum trees that plums get about the size of your thumb. I noticed yesterday I was out there that something has stung a lot of them, and they're oozing sap out. Is that some kind of a moth that how would I control that next year?
Well, if you have a puncture wound, it could be an insect. Hail could do the same thing possibly. But as far as spraying, you can use like a home orchard spray and just follow labeled directions on the container.
Can you look for evidence to try to figure out what it is?
Well, they can take off one of the fruit, take a knife, and cut through that and see if they see an actual insect inside, possibly.
All right. And that's something a lot of us find on harvesting our fruit,
yes,
unfortunately.
Yes. A little extra protein.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Ralph. Here's a couple of questions about lindens. I bet you can guess what they're related to. This one is from Tim in Ankeny. He says, I have a 6-year-old linden that last year got hit twice by the Japanese beetles. What can I do to protect the tree before and after they show up?
Well, I'll start this, but But basically after, especially if the damage is bad, if we get dry in the next couple weeks this fall, especially if it's a smaller tree, I would try to give it some water as long as the soil will take it. I mean, if we're getting water, we're getting good rain and stuff like that, then you don't want to overwater. But if you can give it some extra water going into winter, help it that way. I would not fertilize or anything like that. The bottom line, there's really no good preventatives with that, because the chemicals that have been used actually are harmful to bees, so we don't want to do that. On a smaller tree, if he wants to try to spot spray next year when they do show up, but you're going to have to spray probably every couple days. So it's,
and if they haven't shown up in Ankeny yet, which that sounds pretty good, considering all of the Japanese beetles I'm seeing, is there a chance he's just going to luck out this year?
Well, we tend to see a cycle. They may be bad for a couple years, and then we tend to get a few years off. So we hope those breaks, they can kind of make it through.
All right. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. We'll all be back in just a moment to answer your questions. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. And, of course, you can join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I think that we've already covered this answer, but we had Tim in Ankeny, who's waiting for the Japanese beetles to show up. We have Jane in Washington, who says, please advise how to get rid of Japanese beetles that are eating the leaves of our linden tree. We hope to stop this before all the leaves are gone.
As I said earlier, really, all you can do is, there are some spot treatments. If you Google that and put ISU, Japanese beetle, and ISU, there's some great information on what could be used. What we always tend to say with this is, they tend to recover. They can take defoliation, usually a number of years. I will argue a little bit, if it happened, you know, year after year after year, at some point that can be very stressful. But really all we can do, if it's a smaller tree, you could look at spot treating. With bigger trees, it's really difficult to do because basically most treatments, you have to retreat once a week or every, the good news I've noticed, usually if they're starting to mate, which a lot are, I've seen a lot of it, depending on where you're located, the feeding seems to be slowing down. Now, maybe a little further north, maybe they're still kind of, but at least in this area in central Iowa, I've noticed it looks like they're really starting to slow down. They usually feed 4 to 6 weeks. Sometimes you get generations that come out a little later than others, so it kind of expands it into August.
So we may be almost done.
Yeah, but in general, I would say we're probably close to being done. And sometimes if it's just taking a powerful hose on a smaller tree and hosing them off and using the squish method and smashing and having fun that way, they do stink some, so be careful. But
great job for the kids, as long as they're wearing shoes.
But in general, it's a very difficult pest to manage.
All right. And I have seen, Iowa City area has had a lot of Japanese beetles this year.
Yes.
I have again seen a proliferation of the beetle traps hanging from people's trees. And we have heard from Donald Lewis on many occasions that, yes, those traps attract beetles, but they're really just bringing more into your yard.
Correct.
All right. I just thought it was worth reiterating that.
And I'll just throw this observation in, since I don't work for Iowa State, so I can get away with this. But
be careful.
I will. I've had a few people that have larger acreages that have put them farther away from the target and have had some success reducing a little bit.
Right.
But
well,
I would agree.
That goes along with what Donald says, which is the best place for a Japanese beetle trap is
in
your neighbor's yard.
Right. But the only thing I can tell them, though, too, is the few people that I know have done it with some success, they were emptying 2.5 gallons a day.
Right.
So a lot of compost. But but I agree with him. It does bring more in.
All right, let's get to the phones. Glenn is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hello, Glenn.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I got a question. I have a mature tree in my front yard. I don't know what kind it is, but I have a bad carpenter ant problem, and it's eaten away a lot of the bark and the roots in the ground. You can see where they've kind of burrowed through there. I'm just wondering, is there any option for treatment or trying to get rid of these?
If you go to your local garden store and stuff, there is material that you can get that they'll actually take back in. The one thing that I would tell you, Glenn, is basically carpenter ants are an indication of decay. Carpenter ants do not eat live material. They nest in dead and decaying material. So it's an indication that your tree has some issues. I would strongly encourage that you have a certified arborist or arborist take a look and inspect the overall health. The top of the tree can look just, you know, fantastic, but there could be some definite mm-hmm. structural issues that you want evaluated to make sure that that tree is safe in the landscape. But there are, if you go to your local garden supply stores and stuff, there are dust and other materials that can be used to help manage that pest problem.
Okay, but bottom line is there's probably towards the end of its life cycle, or there might be some other issues.
Well, there's definitely some issues, and what you really want to evaluate is where that decay is, how much there is, what part of the structure, what kind of species. Some species you can have more decay than others. If you have a silver maple and they have average decay, they're much more risky than maybe an oak, depending on where it's located and stuff like that. Again, the challenge is trees can live a long time with decay. Decay does not kill the tree, but it could hurt the structural integrity. So that's where we get concerned.
All right. And you may need to take off a branch or something like that.
And have a look. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it could be, you know, just the start of decay in an old branch, and it may not go all the way through the tree. So you may be able to just prune that one branch off, treat the problem, and maybe the structure is still okay.
All right, Glenn, thanks a lot for your call. Jean is on the line next in Osage. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. I have some cabbage and broccoli plants that have yellowed edges, and then they turn brown. Now, is that a problem from too much water? Or because we've had a lot of rain here.
It could be. It may have a root rot or something of that nature, yes. And that would cause the plant to basically kind of collapse and turn yellow or brown, yes. That could be an issue.
Will the whole plant deteriorate? Or
if the situation is bad enough, it might just completely die. So wait, and if it goes downhill very quickly, then I think you've lost the plants.
And there's nothing she can do at this point, right?
Nope.
So wait and watch. All right, Jean, thanks a lot for your call. Randy's up next in Pleasant Hill. Hi, Randy. Randy, are you there? All right. We don't hear Randy. Let's go to Jason in Iowa City. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about what I think is an ornamental maple tree. Its leaves look like maple, but they're very, very light green, almost yellow. And for the last 3 years, the top of the tree, every summer, the leaves start to turn dark brown in from the edges, and it drops the leaves from about the top, you know, 25% of the tree. And it hasn't seemed to grow very much over the last 3 years. It seems like it's maybe getting sun scorched or something, but I'm wondering if there's anything that I can do to help the tree out, keep that from being a problem.
It sounds like, and you guys can chime in, it sounds like it could be maybe one of the varieties of Norway maple, that there's a couple varieties that have a golden kind of mm-hmm. yellow color. And what I would look for, Jason, is, I mean, if you're getting browning on the edges, that could be a general leaf scorch with the hot weather we have and stuff. What I would look, though, Norway maples sometimes have a tendency to get girdling roots. I would actually look at the base of the tree and look at the depth of the tree to make sure I don't have issues there. That tree should have a pretty good flare where the roots kind of flare out right at ground level. If it looks more like a telephone pole in the ground, then that may be an issue. So I would pull the soil away a little bit and see if there's any roots encircling or anything around the trunk, maybe causing an issue.
Is that something that I could, if there was a root there, could I cut that root, or is that just sort of doom for the tree?
If it's smaller, you can. Actually, if you want to Google stem girdling roots, Minnesota, they have a great, University of Minnesota has done a lot of work on stem girdling roots. As you get bigger, if they're small, like your pinky or smaller, a lot of times you can correct those. If it's a larger tree and they're very large, a lot of times there isn't much you can do. But even if it's the size of your thumb, sometimes you can just take off that section that is cutting into the tree, as long as that root isn't too big to hurt the structural integrity of the tree. So, but to me, that may be, and also those varieties sometimes tend to struggle for whatever reason. So it just could be the environment in general. But I would look for some of those potential problems that may be causing some stress with the tree.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. Here is a question from Earl. He says, I understand that grass seeding is best in late August and weed killing is most productive around October, but shouldn't weeds be sprayed before grass seed is sown so the new grass is not competing with the weeds for nutrients?
Well, what they could do would be to sow grass seed in mid to late August, and then the grass should be well established by late October, and then put on a broadleaf herbicide in early November. That should work very nicely.
All right.
But if they put on a broadleaf herbicide, let's say at this point, you're not going to get very good weed control, and that herbicide may persist in the ground, and it may affect the seeding.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Sherry is on the line, 866-780-9100. She is in Centerville. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling about an old redbud tree that we have, and its newest section coming up from the ground got damaged, got pulled down by somebody who, has a mental problem. It wasn't able to stand by itself. It was just lying down on the ground. So I pulled it up and taped it with like Velcro tape around that and several others, but not binding tight around any trunk or branch. And I'm just wondering if I ought to leave it that way. It seems like it's okay.
Okay, you're breaking up a little bit, Sherry, but the tree was pulled down and having trouble standing up?
What I heard maybe was a sprout, a newer sprout got pulled down. Instead of Velcro, I probably would take some nylon or something and try to stake it if you're going to be working with that sprout and see if it lignifies straight.
If it's a sprout from the tree, would it make sense maybe just to prune it off?
Well, it would, unless she doesn't have enough structure or she wants some more. But you are correct. If it's just sucker sprouts, stuff coming off, she would probably be better off to prune that off. But if she thinks she wants that extra piece there, then I would use something softer to give it some support. But if it is just a true, like a root sucker, I think she'd be better off to prune it off.
All right. Let's go to Chris in Ames. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I love the show.
Thanks. What's your question?
Last fall, I purchased a Princeton elm, Dutch elm resistant, disease resistant elm, and planted here in Ames. It was about 3 feet tall. The top third didn't make it through the winter. Now I'm trying to decide, should I pull it up this fall and start over, or should I let it go and see if a new leader would develop? Because it's growing well. The bottom two thirds look great.
I would say if there's the potential of a leader, Chris, that you could develop with a small stake and stuff, I would probably keep it. If it looks like it's going to be more of a bush, then I would start over. But if you have a kind of a side branch that you think you could propel upward a little bit with a small stake and keep it that way for a year or two and try to support it that way, I would work with it. But if it seems to really be flattening out and you just everything is a side branch and it's going to be all crooked, then you probably want to start over.
But pruning any of the other new limbs off wouldn't necessarily force one to take over and be the leader or anything like that?
Well, if you have one that acts like it wants to be a leader, you could cut back a few of the side branches a little bit to like a bud to basically direct that growth to that. But if just pruning it back isn't probably going to cause one. So I would make sure I have one that maybe has a chance to be the leader. And then you could cut back a little bit. But something that small, kind of back to some of our other responses, I don't want to take too much of that off. It would just maybe be a couple buds back to direct that growth to that one plant or that one leader.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's go to an email question here. This one's from Ellen. I'm thinking about planting arborvitae in the back corner of my yard to screen an unsightly neighbor's yard. Can I prune them to limit their size?
You can, but I'd probably choose varieties that grow to the appropriate size. There are a number of different varieties. For example, there's one called Emerald, which grows about maybe 8 to 10 feet tall, maybe 3 to 4 feet wide. There's Homestrup, a little bit smaller. Then you have Techne that may get to be 10 to 12 feet tall, maybe 10 feet wide. So I would try to choose the variety that fits your need.
All right.
The other thing to consider, too, is if she has a lot of deer, arborvitae are deer candy. So she would need to protect them so that, is that funny?
Or they will prune them.
Or they will prune them for
They
will make them a lollipop tree because you'll basically have a truffula tree because they'll eat everything up to 6 feet, and what you have green is what you have green. So you want to make sure that you can protect them if that's needed.
All right. Here is a question from Kathy. I have a Macintosh dwarf variety and Honeycrisp variety in my home orchard. They bloomed and bore fruit the first year we planted them, but haven't since. How do I encourage them to bloom and bear fruit? It's been about 4 years, and she adds that her red currants in the same orchard are bearing fruit.
You really can't do much to encourage them to bear fruit, but there's a couple of things you don't want to do. One thing is to prune heavily. Because if you prune heavily, that tends to encourage vegetative growth and inhibit flower development. So don't do that. And also typically don't fertilize. Most Iowa soils are quite fertile, and fertilization may again encourage very, very lush growth and inhibit flowering. So don't do those two things. Hope for a good spring, and hopefully they'll bear fruit.
All right, we'll try to squeeze in one more call here. Renee in North Liberty. Hi, Renee. What's your question?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have 5 non-bearing fruit pear trees in my backyard, and 4 of them look fabulous. The one that's closest to the drainage ditch in my backyard is turning yellow, all the leaves. I've tried watering, and I've also tried fertilizing, and it just seems to be looking much worse. Any ideas on what might be I could do to help it?
It might be a root issue. Maybe it's too wet. They like a well-drained soil, and possibly if it's too wet, there may be a root issue there where you're getting some root dieback. So if that's the case, there's not much you can do, unfortunately.
All right, Renee, thanks for your call. A final question. This one's from Jean. Is it okay to compost Japanese beetles? She says as long as it's downwind of the house. She's got 20-plus gallons of beetles.
Ooh.
This year.
Go for it.
All right. Cindy Haynes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Have a great ragbri.
Thank you.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. We'll be back with Hort Day next Friday. In this chair will be Jason Burns next week. I'm Charity Nebbie.